And having that third party assess what's going on with you is so helpful because we're stubborn. Runners are stubborn people.
This Runs Radio episode 569 starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to Diz Runs Radio, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So if you're ready, then I'm ready. Let's get started. Hey guys, real quick, before we dive into today's episode, just want to let you know that this episode of the show is brought to you by the folks over at audible.com. If you haven't heard about Audible before, basically, it's kind of like podcasts on steroids, right? It's audiobooks. It gives you a chance to, maybe knock a few more books off of your, I really want to read this list, but I don't quite have the time to sit down and go through, 200-300 pages or even longer, depending on what books you might be into. And Audible, I was skeptical at first, but I tried it probably about a year ago, and I've been hooked. And I've actually am thinking about upping my subscription level to get 2 books a month as opposed to one. But anyway, the details with Audible, real simple. You sign up every month, you pay at the low level $15, and you get a free book, any book you want that they have on Audible. And if you want to check it out first, real easy, 30-day trial, dizruns.com/audible. You head over there. I believe you do have to put in your credit card information, but they do not charge you at all. You get a free book to pick, and you've got 30 days. If you don't like it, you can cancel, and there will not be a charge, and you do get to keep the book that you select. And for what it's worth, the cancellation process is super simple. It's 1 or 2 clicks, nothing that you have to hassle with anybody, no service person trying to talk you into sticking around. Give it a shot. It supports the show. And I wouldn't be surprised, since you obviously like podcasts, that you might just like audiobooks as well. So if you want to check it out, dizruns.com/audible. And now let's go ahead and dive in to today's episode of the show. Hey guys, y'all know that there are a few topics that when they get talked about on the show, I simply can't help but diving deep. And on today's show, odds are that we will be talking about several of those very topics. My guest today is a veteran of several Boston marathons, and she's also competitive in virtually every race that she enters in and around the kind of DC area where she lives. She's also one half of the coaching duo over at Run Faster and Farther, and it's a pleasure today to be able to go a few easy miles with Miss Julie Sapper. Thanks for joining us today, Julie. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to talk with you.
Yeah, definitely. Looking forward to it. And guys, if you want to find out more about Julie and what she's got going on with her coaching and everything that's over at Run Farther and Faster, the website, real easy. You're never going to guess it. Runfartherandfaster.com. Instagram and Facebook, the handles are the same both places. Just searching or scrolling or at Run Farther and Faster, all one big word. And on the Twitter, saving a few characters, always a good choice and just sound decision. Run Farther Fast. So skipping the and, skipping the ER at the end, but run Farther Fast on the Twitters. And as per usual, I'll have everything linked up in the show notes, which for today's episode, you can get to by just heading over to dizruns.com/569. So Julie, now that we got all of that stuff out of the way, we can get into to the fun stuff and having a little fun, a little chat. And as somebody who listens to the show, you know what the introductory question is. It's this the same for everybody, and we don't let anybody off the hook. And so, got to ask you before we get too far into the weeds: what is your favorite distance to race, and why?
My favorite distance, although it's hard to pick one because I really like so many different ones, but I love the 10-miler distance. Mm-hmm. And there are two reasons. Number one is that I live in the DC area and we have 2 fantastic 10-milers, one in the fall, which is the Army 10-miler, mm-hmm. and one in the spring, which is the Cherry Blossom 10-miler. And both of those races are outstanding and really helped me fall in love with the distance. Specifically, why I like that distance is because it's long enough that you really have to legitimately train for it. So it's a great process because the goal is legit. It's 10 miles, but it's short enough that the recovery is not equivalent to a half marathon or marathon. And the other reason I love it is because, unlike the 5K and unlike the marathon, if you have one bad mile within the race, typically you can kind of compensate for that later in the race and still have a solid performance. So that's why the 10-miler is my favorite race.
Yeah, lots of good reasons there, and it's one of those distances that every once in a while it gets floated around. And I feel like it tends to be from people who are in the Northeast area, where it seems like there's a few more. You know, there's the Broad Street one in Philly. I feel like New York has one or two 10-milers. Obviously, yes. DC has a couple. And I feel like y'all that live in that area are you're fortunate for having that distance, because I don't feel like it's as often like there used to be one. There was a 10 miler here locally for a couple of years, and I guess people weren't interested enough for it to keep coming back, so it's been gone now for 3 or 4 years. It hasn't been back, and I really enjoyed the distance, but it's just not conducive. Like there's half marathons everywhere, there's 5Ks of course everywhere, but it'd be nice to have a few more 10 milers somewhat locally. So you know, it's and like I said, those of you that have them, that tends to be a pretty common answer for a lot of great reasons, because it really is a fun distance to race.
It totally is. You know, I forgot there's one more, and the reason it didn't come to the top of my head was because it's a hard 10-miler, but it's still a lovely race, and that is the very hot and humid and hilly Annapolis 10-miler, which is in August. Oof. So as a Floridian, if you want to really crush your age group, come on up to Annapolis, where many of the Northeasterners try and run this race. It is really tough, but Floridians are more acclimated year-round, so you may have an advantage.
Yeah, but hot is still hot. You know, when it gets hot enough, you can be used to it. But the physiology still dictates that you got to slow down a little bit to avoid having all those heat problems that nobody wants to deal with at any point.
Truth.
So at the beginning of the answer there, Julie, you said that you know it was kind of a tough question for you because you enjoy so many different distances. And for some, I feel like runners, it tends to be kind of all or nothing almost, where it's like you either really enjoy all the different race distances, or you know, there's one that is hands down, this is my favorite distance, no question, and I really don't even care to run much else beyond this one distance, whatever that might be for each individual. What do you enjoy about having, you know, for lack of a better way of saying it, for having a bunch of favorite distances to race? What draws you to the variety of options and different races that are out there?
Well, many years ago when I first started running, in my 20s to relieve stress from law school. I think like a lot of people, not run as much when I was younger and started later. And as a result, I dove into racing pretty quickly after just starting to run. And my first race was a 10K, and that was the first time I ever put on a bib. Mm. So initially, of course, I loved the 10K because that's all I knew. And then I jumped to marathons. I ran Marine Corps Marathon 5 years intermittently between 2000 and 2005. So I considered myself a marathoner. But after I had my first child, I started recognizing that in order for me to enjoy the experience of racing, I cannot always run a marathon. I need to embrace other distances, not only to challenge myself, but also I just love the camaraderie and the spirit of racing and meeting people and towing the line with people and just going out there and trying something and seeing how you do. And so for me, the 5K I love for that reason, because one can run a 5K any given weekend, typically if not training formally for a marathon, for example. And then you can recover pretty quickly. And what I like to do, especially in the summer in the DC area a lot, because I don't typically do fall marathons, is I'll identify maybe once or twice a month a 5K and turn it into a long run where I'll warm up 3, 4, or 5 miles even, run a 5K full out to the best of my ability in the heat. As you mentioned, sometimes it's very hot and we have to adjust, and then do some cool down. And there you go. I've got a long run. I've also managed to challenge myself and integrate a nice little speed workout and also enjoy the camaraderie of a race and maybe win a prize, which is really fun. I'm now a little bit older, so I can win my age group a bit more easily. And that's super fun. And the other reason I really enjoy different distances is because it's always fun. I'm in my 40s. I'm 45. So it's for me, I know that unrealistic to always toe the line and try and get a PR, but I can always toe the line and try to get my best time of the year. Mm. And by working different systems and working short twitch, long twitch, fast twitch, slow twitch, however you say it, muscles and challenging myself each time with new distances and new courses, I'm able to do that. And I think there's a lot of feeling of accomplishment in knowing that even if some of my distance PRs may be behind me, never say never, mm-hmm. I can still challenge myself and achieve new goals and continue to mix it up and have a lot of variety in my running.
Gotcha. Earlier in your career and in your time as a runner, talking about kind of with the idea that maybe some of the PRs, the distance PRs are behind you from just father time starts to catch up. Was chasing the clock a big part of your racing thing? Was that kind of that self-competitiveness to always run faster? Was that a big part of your early days as a runner?
It wasn't initially. And then after I had my first child, I have two kids. One is now 14 and one is 11. And initially, I ran to relieve stress and I ran Marine Corps Marathon because it was so much fun. And while I always tried to do my best, I wasn't super competitive with myself. I just wanted to do well and not get injured. But then after I had my second child, something happened and I realized that I could run a little bit faster than I was actually running. And I joined a group in Montgomery County that was coached by a wonderful guy named Mike Roderick, who has since passed away. And I can share more about that later. And he was the first person to really show me that if you train properly, even if you have some natural ability, you can really crush your runs. Mm-hmm. And in the time that I started running with him in 2008, I had already run one Boston in 2007. And I went to him and ran my second Boston. I went from a 3:43 to a 3:28 in that year, just by running smart. And after that, I realized that with some hard work, but also maintaining a healthy lifestyle, i.e. recognizing when I was overtraining, taking rest days, I could really do better. And I continued to rise and do better. But also, I wanted to continue to have fun. That was the most important thing to me. I'm not a runner it's not my profession by any means. And I wanted to just have fun. It. And between 2008 and 2012, I PR'd in every distance a lot, and it was really great. I sustained a couple injuries during that time, but I recovered well by resting, and I learned a lot about my body. And what I really learned during that more intense time period was that I wanted to do this for a really long time. So I was mindful of my weaknesses. I tried very hard to conquer those weaknesses. And at the same time, I was mindful that my strengths were gifts and I didn't want to squander those. And what I mean by that is maybe others could run 100-mile weeks, but I can't. Mm. And I wanted to make sure I stayed healthy. And I am so grateful that while I was still in my 30s, I recognized that. And now I'm in my mid 40s and I'm still running really well. I'm placing or winning my age group and sometimes winning smaller races overall. And that's not because I have this natural ability as much as that I work hard and I really try to be smart and really identify when I'm starting not to feel well and scale it back. And I think for all runners, that's super important.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And as with a lot of things, the things that are most important are sometimes the hardest lessons to learn. I hadn't planned on going here quite yet, but at least one quick kind of coaching question for you, since that's obviously something that you do, and we'll get into that a bit more as we go. But how can people, are there ways to help people kind of learn that lesson of recognizing when too much is too much and to dial back beyond the kind of, hindsight is 20/20 way where it's like you have to almost go past the line, blow up, recognize that, oh yeah, that was where the problem was. And then I kept going, for another 2 weeks without slowing down. And then I finally broke down. Have you come across ways or good ways for kind of helping to teach that lesson proactively instead of having to learn it in hindsight?
Absolutely. I think the first lesson is that having a coach or a group that is looking out for you is really important, because you'll be more likely to share your pain or your discomfort or your fatigue with someone else if someone else really cares about you. And that can be formally a coach or just a mentor. And having that third party assess what's going on with you is so helpful, because we're stubborn. Runners are stubborn people. But when someone else is saying an observation to you and they care about you and they want you to succeed, that's very meaningful. And perhaps you'll have more of a tendency to listen. So number one is listen to that advice if you know it's coming from a place of interest and caring. And number two is I really believe in the palm pointer test. And what that is, if you can take your index finger, and in our wonderful physical therapist we work with, Rachel Miller, has shared this with us on many occasions, and we share it with others. If you can take your index finger and point to a spot and it's really tender, that signifies a potential injury. But if you can take your palm over an area and rub it and it feels just sore, that's general soreness. So I think that's a great test to do. If you have some pain, and recognizing whether it's normal or abnormal is palm pointer. And another thing is, of course, general fatigue. If you are feeling run down, crabby, or you start to resent your running, is often indicative that there's something going wrong either with your training or with your body, and you need to take a break. And professional athletes take breaks. I mean, after Boston, a lot of these athletes are not running for at least a month or two. Right. And why is it that so many of us amateur athletes can't do that? And I think it's really important for people to recognize that there is nothing weak about taking time off. You're still a runner. Mm-hmm. And just because you're not running for a week, a month, even a few months, that does not take away from the fact that you are still a person who runs. And that's not a sign of weakness. It's a sign of strength. And lastly, as coming from someone who has been injured before, I think it's really important when you do feel signs of injury coming on, you seek the help of a professional, whether it's an orthopedist, a physical therapist, or a podiatrist. And at the same time, if you do receive bad news, you change your mindset and you really try to become, to get a PR in recovery and rehabilitation. So if you can change your mindset to, instead of trying to get a PR in your races or do as well as you can in your running, I'm going to be the best recoverer and get a PR in achieving wellness. And I think with that mindset, it makes the and type A runner focus on the right things during that time.
In all of my years around the sports medicine and various types of athletes and things like that, I don't know that I've ever heard it put that way of being the best recoverer that you can possibly be, but it makes perfect sense. You know, when you're healthy and you're training, it's like, all right, I've got to do this many miles today. I've got to get this much sleep. I've got to foam roll, stretch, strength. Like you have this checklist of all these things that you have to do to try to hopefully help you get to that PR on race day. But then once you're injured, it's like, oh, hell with it. Like, I'm going to sit on the couch. I'm going to watch TV. Like, the diet goes out the window, and you're making the recovery process that much more difficult. So instead of, you know, just throwing your hands up, like, why not, like you said, shift your focus to what can you do to help recover? I think that's genius.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, I love that. And something that, you know, I can think of probably a dozen people between clients and people that I know from social media and people I know from running locally that could use that advice right now. So that's a gem right there.
Thank you. I hope it helps a lot of people. I know how tough it is to be in that space. It's awful. And so I hope that those people find it helpful.
Yeah, certainly. So shifting back a little bit, kind of like I said, before we got to the coaching bit, but since it was right on the front burner right there, I wanted to touch on it there for a minute. But you mentioned that you kind of had gotten into a spell there where chasing some times and PRs and things was maybe not the overwhelming driving factor, but it was certainly something that was on the radar. You had some ambitions to keep running faster. And then, you know, more recently, you've kind of shifted the focus to being maybe less overall distance PR, but like, what is the fastest I can run XYZ distance this year? Was that a tough shift for you? Because I know a lot of runners, and especially a lot of road runners, tend to get so focused on the clock. And once the clock starts, you know, stops getting faster, it can be really discouraging. Did you have that struggle, or was it a pretty easy transition of kind of like with the injuries things, just shifting your focus, and now you've got a new way to set goals and hopefully achieve them?
I think for a little while, it was probably hard. I'm trying to remember back as to when my time slowed a little bit. But I think I had to shift my perspective because, first of all, my times have not slowed that much at all since my 30s, and I'm so grateful for that. And secondly, as a coach, I work with so many different runners with different goals, different ages, different abilities. And I almost feel like it's selfish of me to always think that way about myself when, number one, I have this opportunity to help others. And what a gift is that I get to not only run for myself, but run with and for others. It's such a joy. And number two, I'm so grateful to have my health. And so I guess I shifted my mindset a little bit, but trust me, when I go to a race, I worked really hard to get there. I want to do my best. So it's not like in the middle of the race, I give up and think, oh, well, I'm slower. I'm still out there pumping my arms and legs, trying to do the best I can. But when I finish, I'm rarely disappointed. It's more, wow, I just did really well in my age group. And I love it when I turn a new age group. That's so fun. So I'm now in the bottom of the 45 to 49 year old age group. It's amazing. And I also think I'm in really good company. I have a lot of friends my age who run. And when you're running with people who are also masters, I think that also helps you understand how fortunate we are. And as we get older, we see a lot of things in life that are really tough. And the fact that I have this gift and I'm able to use it not only to relieve stress, but to also help others and to bring joy for myself and also my family and friends, extending on that joy, it would be selfish of me to feel otherwise. So I'm really happy to race. I'm happy to do well. I will always do my best no matter what my age. And as the time slow, I will continue to try and garner that joy to remind me that I'm really, really lucky to be out there.
Right, right. And that's something that I think, you know, no matter how young or old you are, I think that's something that is important that we all remember, just how fortunate we are that we have the health and the ability to get out there and push ourselves, whether that's, you know, 13-minute pace, whether that's 8-minute pace or anything in the middle or anything on either end. You know, it's certainly something that is easy to take for granted. I know I'm probably guilty of it, and a good reminder to be grateful at all points. Kind of continuing the theme though, with, you know, kind of as you have been in running now for, you know, pushing 20 years and, you know, obviously the body changes, you have a couple of kids, that's a big change right there. And, you know, the different focuses and things like that, and how running has kind of evolved for you a bit over the years. What have you noticed? I'm assuming you have, but have you noticed things that you have to do now, maybe to stay healthy, maybe to continue to hold steady and see some improvement here and there, that maybe, you know, 10 years ago you didn't have to worry about as much, because obviously lots of, you know, obviously all of us get older. I mean, that's you know, something we can't control there. And there's tons of folks that listen to the show that are probably in the same, you know, age group that you are and that have been probably running for 10, 12, 14 years and are noticing that their bodies are changing too, and things that they need to do to stay healthy and to keep pursuing the sport. So any thoughts on that line of subject would be much appreciated.
Yeah. Sure. Okay. So first of all, you mentioned in the first part of your question about having kids. I will tell you, I got faster with each kid.
Wow.
I don't know how, but I think there's a science with women and having babies after you've fully recovered. I think your circulation gets better, I swear. And my times only went up after I had each kid. So anyone out there who's listening that feels like having a baby may slow them, be patient, take enough time you need to recover, because I have seen so many awesome mother runners continue to improve and do amazing things after having kids. I think for me, some of the things that I have done personally that have helped me sustain my running life and continue to run Boston every year is I tend to only run one marathon a year. Now, I'm very fortunate in that typically I requalify for Boston at Boston, and I recognize that that is rare, but I love running Boston. It is very important to me. So that is my marathon that I run every year. And the rest of the year, I do shorter stuff ranging from 5K to half marathon. And I believe for me, that has very much helped me stay healthy and stay fresh. Because I'm not always doing marathon training and cycling in and out of marathons. I take a lot of time to recover after a marathon. I typically don't do anything longer than a 10K until the end of the summer, where I do the Annapolis 10 miler. I haven't run since Boston. I am running this weekend. I'm pacing a race at a pace that's slower than my typical pace. But I'm not really doing anything until then. And then after that, I'll take some days off. So I'm not hesitant to take them off after a big race. I also do a lot more foam rolling. I don't enjoy it. It takes time. All busy. And the last thing I want to do is foam roll. So what I tend to do is I keep a foam roller under my desk. I work part-time as a lawyer for the government. And I have a foam roller in my office. And I will foam roll when I have a conference call or something like that. I'll have it on speaker. I'll just foam roll. And that's my way of fitting it in. Another thing I do that really has been helpful is I do a lot of strength training. I work with a wonderful local gym called Primus. They do TRX. And TRX is fantastic for runners. It's just, it really complements running in many ways because it's gentle, but very challenging, and it requires a lot of core stability. And of course, running requires core strength, and running is also a legged sport. You run on each leg. So you want to be equally strong on each side, and TRX really helps accomplish that. So that's something I've integrated into my running over the past 4 years that I think has really made a difference. And having a place to go keeps me honest. I'm not great about doing strength training on my own. I can when I don't have time, but having a class that I can go to really helps me stay honest. And another thing I do is, I know this sounds a little kooky, but Lisa and I both really like it, cryotherapy. We both have been going pretty religiously since last summer. I go about once a week. Before Boston, I went a couple of times before the race, and I finally brought myself to go after the race last Friday because the thought of going into a cold chamber after running that race was like, no thank you. But we both feel like it's helped. And those are some of the little things that I personally do. And then finally, my eating. I've always been a relatively healthy eater. I try to just take in a lot of protein after runs and workouts. I really try to eat whole foods. I love my candy, so I don't deprive myself. But I really try to eat my sweets so I don't crave them, but limit them. And I have a rule of thumb where I really, really try not to eat at least 2 hours before bedtime. And that's because it allows me to sleep better. And sleep is critical, not only for training and racing and running in general, but just for being a good human.
Right.
And I want my sleep to be consistent through the night. And I find that if I limit eating causing my body to digest anything before bed, it truly helps me get a better night's sleep.
Yeah, there's no substitute for a good night's sleep. And I feel like more and more as the sleep research kind of continues to come out, it shows more and more how valuable, you know, that good, whatever it is, 6, 7, 8, 9 hours of uninterrupted, good, restful sleep can be, not only, like you said, to be a good human, but, you know, the performance enhancing benefits of good sleep, the repairing, the injury prevention. It's, you know, if there's one thing you're going to do for yourself, no matter what, you know, endeavors you are on, getting good sleep is right up there as one of the best things you can do.
You are so right. We tell our runners sometimes if it's between running an extra mile in your workout or getting that extra 15, 20 minutes of sleep, pick a sleep. We have definitely found ourselves that just getting a little bit more sleep each night helps more than that extra mile in a training run.
Yeah. It's an important thing. And wow. Yeah. It's something that's, it's so like a lot of things that we've talked about a little bit today and it's been, you know, conversations that have been had over the years, you know, it's little things that it's easy to take for granted. It's easy to overlook, but the cumulative effect of doing it consistently, the foam rolling while you're on the conference call or eating well, or yeah, in this case, getting the sleep, you know, one day, maybe not that big of a deal, but over a week to a month to a year, boy, it makes a difference when you add that all up at the end of the, you know, at the end of the training cycle or whatever the case might be.
Absolutely. And I also think that there are so many unknown benefits to sleep that I think as the years go on, there's a lot of emphasis on sleep now. I mean, every other commercial is about sleep apnea and you know, these Zipas and all this stuff. But I think there are a lot of unknown bits that will continue to surface about the cumulative effect of not getting enough sleep in our time.
Yeah. Yeah. So exactly. Why wait until the research comes out to just get ahead of the curve, get some sleep now, and you're going to be better off and the research is going to catch up to it. And everybody else is going to be jealous that you've been sleeping, you know, full nights for the last, however long it's been, at this point.
That's right.
So, I certainly want to talk about Boston. You've mentioned it a couple times, and I'm not going to, let the opportunity to talk about Boston pass, but, first and foremost, want to take a quick second and pay a couple bills and, let everybody know that today's episode is brought to you by the good folks over at Audible. So obviously you like listening to people talk while you're out on a run, while you're out running errands, whatever the case might be, doing work around the house. And if you ever run out of, you know, episodes of the, of this podcast to listen to, and you haven't found other podcasts to fill in the gap, or if you're like me and you're like, God, I wish I had more time to read books. Well, hello, Audible, books. People read you the books. You can listen to it. I just picked up, as we're recording this, I picked up the book, Endure. I think it's called Endure. It's either Endure or Endurance. I don't even have my phone right here, but, Alex Hutchinson, who's a great, great exercise physiologist type of writer, writes for Runner's World, wrote this book that's all about kind of the mental side of our sport and building the mental endurance to continue to help us push our limits. So if you want to check that book out, you can check it out for free by just going over to disruns.com/audible. It gets you for a free trial. You do have to put your credit card in and they will start to bill you after the free 30 days. But I can promise you this, that if you decide to cancel, which I don't think you will, but if you decide to cancel, it's super easy. There's no hoops to jump through. It's literally a one click. I want to cancel. You will never get charged and you get to keep the book. So if you want a book to check out here, let me pull it up so I can give you the proper title. It is Endure. Endure by Alex Hutchinson. Good book so far. And would love you to check it out if you haven't done so already on Audible, disruns.com/audible. So Julie, the you know, again, I can't find out that somebody has run Boston once and not talk to him about it, let alone the fact that you've done it a bunch of times. Like you said, it's kind of your marathon that you run year after year. And as we are recording this, we're just over a week out of the 2018 Boston Marathon, which was a little bit chilly, a little bit wet. So hopefully, like you said, you didn't rush to the cryotherapy room, and hopefully you've dried out and warmed up since then. But you know, we'll start big and maybe zoom in a little bit as we go. But what, you know, for somebody like me who's never been there yet, but will get there at some point, What do you love so much about the Boston Marathon?
Well, I feel like I have to share something about my first Boston to really explain how much I love it. And that is, I qualified for my first Boston before my second child was born, back in the day when there was an 18th window to qualify. Mm. And so I qualified before I got pregnant. I had a baby and my qualifying time still. So I signed up for Boston and ran it in 2007 when my daughter was 8 months old. Mm. And I trained the best I could. And having, at the time, there was no, the running community was not bonded by social media yet. So I didn't really have anyone to train with or ask much about the race. But I started getting these emails about a week before the race from the BAA, Boston Athletic Association, saying things like, there may be a nor'easter. And I wasn't even familiar with what that was. And even the spelling was unique. And I started freaking out. What business did I have of a mom of two young kids to go run in a nor'easter? But I had already paid for my flight. And my family was going to come with me. And that was put on the back burner, obviously, with the announcement of a nor'easter. So I started entering these weird Runner's World chat rooms, which was all that was available at the time. And quickly realized that Boston was a really big deal. I didn't quite have an appreciation for it yet. And reading all these chat rooms, I quickly recognized that I had to go run this thing. It was such an honor to be invited, and I needed to go run it, nor'easter or not. So I ordered this Sugoi rainproof jacket, and I had it overnighted to me because it said it would keep me dry. And I showed up at the start line with this huge windbreaker, and I was myself and scared to death. The winds were pretty high, but I started running it, and I was just blown away, no pun intended, by the amount of spectators back in 2007 who were there in nor'easter to spectate, screaming at us. They weren't there to support any particular racer. They were there to support all of these runners in our active hobby, and it was so beautiful. And in spite of the weather that year and the winds, which calmed down, I had the best time. Such a deep appreciation for the history, the camaraderie, and the honor of having the opportunity to run this race. And I vowed when I crossed the finish line that year in 3:43, where I requalified because the qualifying time then was a little bit higher for people in their 30s. I vowed I would come back any year I could. And since then, I've run it 10 times. I had a couple of 2 years where I had different injuries. I missed it in 2008 and 2015, but otherwise I've run it every year. And there's been a story every year, something very special about each year. I can tell you exactly, I could tell you a great Boston story for every year I've run it. But this year in particular was just so hard. and I had already run in a Nor'easter. I very much felt that I could conquer anything after 2007. And this was harder. So for anyone who ran this year, and if you hear someone who did not run this year but ran in 2007 say, oh, I totally understand, I ran in the Nor'easter, you absolutely can respond, yes, but it was worse this year.
Oh, goodness.
So to answer your question, history, the camaraderie, the people, the beauty of the race, and being a part of an athletic event that's so esteemed as an amateur athlete, and to share the same experience with professional athletes, when else do you have that experience but at a race like Boston?
Yeah, that's certainly one of those things that makes our sport unique from any other sport that you can think of. I mean, you know, like good amateur golfers don't just get to go play, you know, the Augusta with the pros. Like, but as runners, like we have at these big races, we have the opportunity to, you know, maybe not run with them for very long, but we have the opportunity to share the course on the same day with the best runners in the world. You mentioned that that this year was the hardest as far as the weather and stuff goes, but also, you know, a little bit earlier you mentioned that basically Boston's the only marathon you run every year with the goal of requalifying. Does that add a little extra pressure to the race, since you know that this is kind of, if everything goes well, this is your one marathon for the year and you'll be back to run it again next year?
Well, I had a unique situation this year because I felt, going into the race before the situation, so confident that I would requalify because I'm now 45, and typically I run a marathon on a great day in 3:20s and on an okay day in the 3:30s. So I felt like I was trained to do something around there if the weather cooperated. And so I didn't feel as much pressure this year. In fact, I reached out to a friend of mine and said, would you like to run together? Because I knew I was confident enough to feel that I would probably be able to sustain a 7:45 pace for this race, which is his slower pace, and he wasn't as well trained, and we'd have a good time. So, in other words, I was really trying to set myself up to have just a fun Boston. Mm-hmm. And as the weather forecast continued to get worse and worse, my perspective shifted, and I really wasn't thinking as much requalifying on the days leading up to the race as much as being safe and surviving. I don't mean to sound dramatic, but I just was so nervous about my body and how it was going to perform in the weather. And I kept telling myself that I can't control the uncontrollable, which is the weather. I can only control how I react to it. And the one thing I can control is that if I start to feel like something wrong, if my speech starts blurring, or I just feel such a sense of cold that I'm not able to use my energy to run, but instead I'm showing some signs of hypothermia, I get off the course because this is a choice. This is, no one is forcing me to do this. So that was where my mindset was. And in terms of requalifying, I knew in the back of my head, if God forbid I had to drop it, I would find another race this year and run it and be back. I was determined to do that, but that was not my biggest concern during the leading up to the race.
What about in other years? Is it still a situation where you're comfortable enough in your training and your pace that it's not the biggest thing that's on your mind on race day?
That's correct. And that's because I really want to enjoy the race. I feel like it would be such a waste for me to run Boston and only think about requalifying for the next year, because then I'm not in living in the moment. So when I train for Boston, I really work hard. I try to train smart, and I try to really honor the fact that I'm just running this one marathon. And certainly I'm putting all my eggs in one basket, but at the same time, I have a big enough buffer between my typical marathon pace and my qualifying time that I believe, unless I have an injury going on, I think during the race, that I can finish. So I love running the race. I love the process. Of course, I hate running the race around mile 22, 23. Doesn't hate a marathon during that time at some point. But I really enjoy going through each town. I love the spectators. I love the character of each town. And I just being with my friends in Boston, the Montgomery County Roadrunners, and our Run Farther and Faster runners that we've now trained to qualify and run Boston. And all of us being up there together is so special. And then I have this wonderful high school childhood friend from Ohio who runs it. I see every year, and I love going to all the speakers, and I got to meet Dina Castor this year and Amby Burfoot. And last year I met Catherine Switzer, and it's just such a great experience. It's not just about the race. It's the whole weekend.
So million-dollar question. Did you re-qualify this year? Even with all the weather and the rain and the wind and all that?
I did. So do you want to hear as brief as possible my race story?
Absolutely.
Okay. So my story was, my partner Lisa and I ordered, similar to this jacket I ordered in 2007. We were so panicked about the weather privately because we didn't want to freak out our runners. What example would we be setting? So we were, oh, it'll be fine. We're scouring Amazon. Lisa finds these bright yellow motorcycle suits to wear, honest to God, bright yellow slickers. And she orders one, I order one, and we share them with our Run Farther and Faster runners. So we had a group of runners wearing these motorcycle suits to keep us warm and dry. We tuck our bags and hop in Boston. We board the buses. It's just a mist. And like clockwork, as soon as the bus rolls out of downtown Boston and we layered up in these motorcycle suits with our one issued bag of like food and blankets, the rain starts pouring side on our bus as if it's like a sign, like, ha ha, you thought you were going to get, you thought it was going to be easier. And when we arrived in Hopkinton and they dumped us off in Athletes Village, it was covered in mud. It was such an unfortunate, depressing sight compared to previous years. And the announcer was trying to be peppy, but at one point you hear the announcer saying, I got to give you guys credit for running in this. And that he would never do it. And there's peppy music like blaring, but you know everyone is really trying to be positive. I wore hiking boots into Hopkinton, as did many others, or old shoes. I had my run shoes and socks, plastic bag to keep them dry. I also had hand warmers, latex gloves to put under my gloves to keep my hands dry. Someone brought lubricant, not Body Glide, but yes, lubricant. And we it works. It helps. It helps with blisters. So all of us are smearing this all over our feet, our toes, and any spots where you chafe to try and prevent chafing wounds. And we sat in Hopkinton in a tent for 3 hours, and all I did was focus as much as I could on being positive, feeling gratitude. I know that sounds hokey, but Dina Castor had just spoken the day before about her feelings about the race she was about to run and how important it is to feel gratitude even when the weather isn't cooperating. And I really tried to chant that, because at the end of the day, how lucky was I? I was running Boston with my friends, and I will have a great story to share at the end of this race. And so the other thing I was doing, practically speaking, along with all the runners that I was with, was we tried desperately to conserve energy and not share. So for anyone listening in the future who's running a race that it's going to be cold to start, it is so imperative that you be mindful of how cold it will be when you're waiting. Make sure you are covered head to toe, and even if you feel ridiculous, so you are not exerting any energy shivering before your race. This is so important. And I also was just gorging on carbs, because that's what you do. And I walked to the start line, and I didn't have any of my clothes on to run in. It was, I mean, I did, but it was all underneath this motorcycle suit. I was just, my adrenaline was not going because I was heavily clothed. I just wanted to stay to the very last minute. And 5 minutes before the gun went off, I stripped off my clothes and I was wearing like a windbreaker, capris, arm warmth over my ankles. I know that sounds silly to cover the space between my ankles and my knee. And I had a face mask that I could put on and off. Vaseline on my face as a barrier from the cold. Multiple layers of gloves, and I was heavy. I felt like I had so much on. It was ridiculous that I was going to try and run garb, but I knew it was the best outfit personally. I tend to be cold when I run, and I wanted to make sure I was warm. And when the gun went off, the rain was pouring sideways, and I felt okay. I was shocked. I did not feel as uncomfortable as I thought, and my friend Ken and I, who ran with me, we were cracking intermittently for probably the first 10 miles because everything was so ridiculous. The spectators were amazing. There weren't many, but the ones who were there were amazing and spirited, and just props to them. And the volunteers were incredible. And I would carefully take my water and I wouldn't spill it on my cans, or I'd take my nutrition, which I kept like in my bra because it was easiest to access and I didn't have to open anything. It was ridiculous. And Wellesley was still outstanding and everything was going pretty well. I ran a slower than intended pace to ensure that I was not using up too much fuel because I knew my body was also using energy to stay warm. Mm-hmm. So I was clocking at an 8:15 pace most of the time. I had some 7:45, I was a little cocky at times, mostly 8:15. And then around mile, I think it was 16 or 17, felt like I was working a little too hard. I looked quickly at my Garmin and I realized I went from an 8:15 pace to a 10:30 pace.
Wow.
And all systems were starting to shut down. And I didn't know what was happening, but I immediately got to the water stop that was next, because there's water stops at every mile at Boston. It's fantastic. Grabbed Gatorade and took it in. And I realized I wasn't breathing well. And I knew, thinking that I probably was showing some early signs of hypothermia. My body just wasn't able to stay warm. I was eating as much as I could, but I probably wasn't metabolizing my honey stinger chews in the same way I would if the temperatures were a little better and there wasn't as much wind. So I wanted to get to a medical tent. I seriously felt like it was time to quit. I'm not being dramatic. I very much felt that it was time. But unfortunately, there wasn't a medical tent nearby. And Ken, who's very smart, said, you have to keep jogging because if you stop, the hypothermia symptoms will get worse. Mm-hmm. So I jogged. And he handed me a gel. I was taking a Clif gel. I sucked it down. And something happened. And I was able to get my mojo back. I wasn't running 8:15 paces by any means. But I was able to somehow get through Newton, which is where all the hills are, including Heartbreak Hill. I'm sure my form and the way I looked was like death, but I did it. I don't remember it, but I was with a friend, and I very much believe that teamwork makes the dream work. Because in this instance, if I didn't have someone with me who I knew cared about my best interest and was observing me, I don't think I would have the courage to keep going after having that breathing issue. Mm. But I think inherently I knew that if I looked really off, he'd pull me off the course.
Right.
He knows me well. And I am so grateful for that company on that day. And I think there are many stories of this at Boston this year, working together, whether they knew each other in advance of the race or not. And I think the lesson to that, including as high up as, of course, Desi and Shalane, which is running can be a team sport. And on this day, it was extra important. So I made it through Newton. I picked up my pace somehow the last 6 miles and went back to enjoying the crowds. Definitely slowed it up. But I finished in 3:43, and I've never been prouder to finish a Boston. Never.
Well, congratulations. And like you said, you know, at the beginning of the day, where you're just trying to remember to be grateful, as much as it wasn't anybody's idyllic day to run a race, you know, you're talking to one guy who would have gladly taken your spot, you know, like as bad as it was, as not nice as the weather was. I mean, I would have loved to have been there. So like you said, always be grateful, because there's no matter what race, Boston, of course, but even the smaller races, the local races, the things like that. There's people that would love to be there that can't for whatever reason. So, you know, always keep that gratitude bit in mind.
100%. 100% agree.
So before we wrap things up, and we talked a little bit of coaching at the beginning, but we'd love to get into a bit more of the Run Farther and Faster, what you've got going on. And, you know, with Lisa, of course, is your partner, your coaching partner, business partner there, who's going to be on the show soon. So, you know, we may reference Lisa a little bit, but guys, I'm going to talk to Lisa here in another few days. So we'll get her side of the story as it comes around. But, what got you into the coaching front? What was the thing that made you want to not only continue to run for yourself, but also to kind of give back to other runners?
Well, the impetus that got me into coaching was someone who was a wonderful influence, and that was my coach, Mike Broderick, who passed away very suddenly of lung cancer in 2010. And Mike, I realized by having him as an influence and a coach, he made a huge difference in my running and so many runners in my area. And I recognized that having the opportunity to do that for others is such a gift. So Mike taught for many years the Road Club of America coaching certification courses, and I took one of those courses. And notes to me, so did a gal named Lisa Reichman, who I did not know at the time. And a mutual friend of ours introduced us after we had both obtained certifications. And we both helped each other out with first gigs. I had a gig working at the Rockville Recreation Department, and she had a gig working at the local Jewish Community Center. And we realized after doing that for a couple of years that we really had a very similar values and beliefs how to coach, which is understanding each runner as a person, not just as a runner, and seeing what makes them tick. And we decided to start our own coaching entity called Run Farther and Faster. And we started out doing group programs for runners of all levels and in the Rockville, Montgomery County area. And our programs were just a little bit we're small enough that we could really work with each runner individually. And the whole idea behind them was just helping each runner do a little bit more than they think they possibly can each day. And that's the quote in the back of our shirts, do a little bit more each day than you think you possibly can. And that morphed into virtual coaching, which we've been doing for the past 7 years. And so we have runners all over the country, and we even have runners in Great Britain and Israel who we coach. And we love working with runners, whether in person or virtually, because every runner comes to us with a story, a challenge, and a goal. And for me, there's nothing more rewarding than helping someone achieve a goal, especially adults our age and adults, period, because what else in life can we do it in our phase in life where you set a goal, you work hard, and you can achieve it? How cool is that? Yeah. You can't necessarily do that easily with work, with parenting, with the other challenges in life. With running, you can. And being a part of that and allowing people to find their happiness and working with them to prevent them from being injured, working with them to achieve PRs, to even get to Boston is truly a dream come true. And I just adore working with Lisa. We both come to running from very similar places, and we both work hard in our own running, but we also recognize there's so much more value in helping others achieve their goals. And how we do that is, like I said, we really try to get to know each runner on an individual basis, connect with them, and figure out what makes them tick and makes them succeed.
Yeah, it's certainly obviously something that I enjoy doing as well. And I mean, I don't think anybody that is in coaching does it for, you know, any other reason than it's what a blessing to be able to help other people. I mean, there's no greater feeling, really, at least that I know of from a professional standpoint.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right, because I have another job. I work part time as a lawyer, and being able to do this job has really, it has brought me a tremendous amount of joy, and it's actually allowed me to thrive in my other job too, because I get so much happiness from this. And I also coach kids. I coach a run club at my kids' elementary school, and I've been doing that for the past 7 years. And being able to work with elementary school kids and teach them the value of having a sport. It doesn't have to be running, but if this is their entry into sport, how great is that? And some of these kids are now in high school, and they're doing amazing things with their running. And just having that opportunity to give back to the community has just been so rewarding.
Yeah, certainly agree. And you know, a little chance to give back to kind of pay it forward as a coach as well, or at least to share some coaching wisdom. Like I've said before, and I'll say it again, whenever I talk to running coaches, I love to, you know, ask for a tip. And there's, you know, we all have our typical things that we talk about that you know have really seen success for ourselves, for our clients, things like that. So you know, do you have a tip or two or a little bit of advice that you could share before we wrap up today, Julie? For, you know, obviously it's generic, so it's not you know specific to any one person, but for those that are listening, is there one kind of takeaway, kind of coaching tip, message that you could share today?
I have a couple, is that okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. First is enjoy the process. If you are always running to achieve a goal without enjoying the process that is required to achieve that goal, you will not enjoy your running. So I think just having an appreciation for the process and enjoying those group runs, enjoying those track workouts, understanding that sometimes the pain and discomfort is a reward for your hard work is really important. The second thing is tailor your training. Don't just assume that every training plan out there is the right training plan for you. For example, lifting the you only need to run 3 days a week, half marathon training, and that may work for one of your running buddy, but it may not work for you. So don't assume it'll work for you just because it worked for someone else. Really take the time to look at your own strengths and weaknesses and decide what's right for you. My third tip is strength training. As we get older, it is not good to just run. It is so important to build your muscles and to ensure that you are able to run injury-free. So the more you can do with respect to strength training, the better. It does not have to be anything formal, even just taking a few minutes every other day to do some, we like to call strength training snacks, such as planks, push-ups, bridges, lunges, squats are just terrific to help you maintain your running health. And the fourth is make sure you get enough sleep. We talked about this earlier, but if you are crabby because you're running instead of sleeping, that's going to permeate into other aspects of your life. And although running is important to anyone listening to this, of course, family and friends and our life outside of running is more important. And make sure that you are doing all you can for your running to support your running, but not at the expense of more important things in your life.
I love it. And so, we're not going to skip the philosophical question. So we're going to jump into that real quick. But great tips, Julie, and certainly some things that hopefully folks will take to heart, because I couldn't agree with any of them anymore. So love those tips. Thank you for sharing those. And then the philosophical question, as we're wrapping up today, pushing maybe a little bit longer than normal, but hey, whatever. It's all good. Hopefully people don't mind too much, and if they do, they've already turned off. So whatever. We're good at that point. As per usual, kind of wrapping up, very open-ended. You can take it a bit long. Don't worry about the time unless you need to cut out of here, or you can cut it short. But just keep it kind of simple today. At this point in your life, you've been running for like I said earlier, about 20 years and Boston a bunch of times and different all the other different races that you do. But why? Why does running still light you up at this point in your life? Why do you still get out the door most days and go get your miles in? Philosophical question, wrap things up today. Why do you still run?
I still run because I love myself, the idea of setting a goal, working hard and achieving it. And I believe that when I show myself that I can do hard things running, then I can do hard things in every other aspect of my life. And that's even more important now as my kids get older. They're watching me. They've been watching me all their life. And while I may say things to them or tell them what to do, really what's going to impact them now and for years to come is them watching me do. And so I not only run for me, but I also run for others, and I run because I can. One day I might not be able to anymore, and I am, again, so appreciative that I am able to do it now, and I don't want to take that for granted.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Once again, guys, runfartherandfaster.com is the website. We'll have all the social media things linked up in the show notes, disruns.com/569. But if you just remember Run Farther and Faster, you can probably find Julie and Lisa on all things social as well. Instagram and Facebook are real simple. And Twitter, save a couple characters at Run Farther Fast. So that is it for today. Julie, thank you so much for taking the time and joining us today. It's been a pleasure, and hopefully maybe we'll have the opportunity to do this again at some point down the road.
Thank you so much. I'm just so thrilled to talk with you, and I really appreciate you having me on today.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode of the show. I hope you enjoyed the conversation between Julie and myself. And as always, I'd be curious to know, what stood out to you from this episode? What was something that we talked about today that might stick with you for more than just the duration of today's conversation? For me, it definitely, hands down, you probably know what it is, but is when Julie was talking about the idea of being the best recoverer that you can possibly be. You know, we get so focused on being the best runner, on PRing, on doing all of the right training. But what happens when, heaven forbid, you're injured? Or just after a busy race, after a hard race, after you really pushed yourself, after a hard training session, you know, we just kind of let our bodies do their thing. And our bodies are good at doing their thing. But what if we put the same type of energy and effort into our recovery process as we do into our training and racing process? And again, it's not just when you're injured, although when you're injured, it's probably even more important, but certainly just on a day-to-day basis. You know, if you wouldn't miss your weekly speed session for anything, if you wouldn't miss your normal Monday morning run to kick off the start of your week for anything, then why are you willing to sacrifice your Tuesday yoga session or your evening stretch and foam roll session while you're watching TV? Those things need to be just as important as your training if you're serious about, you know, reaching and exceeding your training goals. Again, our bodies do a great job of taking care of themselves, and they do a great job of recovering on their own. But how much better would they do if we gave them the tools, if we gave them the right environment? You know, a seed might grow, but is it going to produce a bountiful harvest if it doesn't get enough water and enough sunshine and enough, you know, nutrients from the soil or possibly fertilizer, things like that? Probably not. And our bodies, the recovery process of our bodies is the same way. The things that we do, you know, our bodies are going to recover, but they could recover more quickly. They could recover, you know, have better gains, better strength, better, you know, less fatigue, things like that, if we give them the right environment. So, you know, my note from this episode was PR in recovery. And that's something that I'm going to definitely take to heart and continue to work towards, is doing the things that I can do on a regular basis, from eating, from sleeping, from being hydrated, from foam rolling, from stretching, from yoga, from strength training, all of those things. I'm going to set a new PR in recovery. And try to do that every day. Try to do that every day. So that was my takeaway from this episode. What about you? What stood out to you from this episode? Would love to hear it. Shoot me a tweet at DizRuns. Shoot me an email, DizRuns@gmail.com. And of course, you can always head over to the show notes for this episode or any episode and leave your feedback there. Once again, DizRuns.com/569. We'll take you to the show notes for this episode, and you can let us know what you think and what your takeaways were from this episode. So with that, we'll go ahead and put a bow on this thing. Once again, DizRuns.com/Audible. If you want to try out Audible for free, check out Endure. It's a great book. Although, honestly, it was a good book. It was an interesting book. May or may not be one that I'll go back and listen to a few times. But that's the beauty of Audible, is just like any book. You can get a book. You can always learn something from it. And then, you know, if there's a lot of takeaways, you can go back and listen to it again and again and again. And I've done that with a few of the books that I've gotten, probably more businessy books. But there's a couple of running books I've listened to in the past that I'll probably revisit as well. So if you want to check it out, DizRuns.com/Audible. Get yourself that free 30-day trial, and it definitely supports the show at the same time. So with that, we are official. This episode is in the books. Thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. Appreciate your time and your attention. Hope you have a great rest of the day. And certainly looking forward to talking to you again soon. But until then, please take care. See you guys.